A collaboration experiment between civilian academics and military officers leads to an unexpected discovery. The RAND Corporation says the two groups both felt intimidated by each other. Paula Thornhill is director of the Strategy and Doctrine Program and senior political scientist at the RAND Corporation and a retired Air Force Brigadier General. And she says colleagues need to shed underlying doubts about each other to achieve true collaboration. I cite your credentials, Paula, to indicate that you're uniquely qualified to look at this bridging because you've lived both of these. Thank you for being on the program today.
Well, thank you, Francis.
How did you organize this experiment? Where'd you start, and why did you think this was important to bring these two groups together?
So we did this in collaboration with the Stanton Foundation, which sponsors young, rising up academics who are looking at nuclear security issues. And as we worked with these academics through the Stanton Foundation, what we discovered is, even though they were in the nuclear arena, they really weren't familiar with the military and a lot of the issues that actually move over into the military realm as they dealt with nuclear problems. So in collaboration with the Stanton Foundation, we decided that we could come up with a problem that would bring together both these rising academics and rising military talent and get them to focus on a problem.
You write in Defense One, the exercise presented a contemporary geopolitical problem that might require a military solution. It brought together an accomplished group of field-grade military officers, lieutenant colonels, colonels, Navy captains, and emerging academic and policy experts at the assistant professor or postdoctoral levels. Why did you want to go to those levels and not either higher up than them or underneath them?
The very basic reason is that they have enough knowledge to know what kind of questions to ask, but they haven't been in the business so long that they have they've already reached conclusions about how to think about the problems.
So it kind of engendered a little bit of reliance on the other side, as well as the knowledge that each person brought and the experience and education that each person brought.
Absolutely. You've actually hit on the key point, because the only thing we felt we had to do from a RAND perspective and from the Stanton Foundation perspective is design a problem that no one person could solve and force it into a team collaboration. And once we did that, and it was, like you just mentioned, it was a real-world problem that had escalation dynamics in it, and all of a sudden you get a lot of very talented folks focused on solving problems, and it's something to behold.
How much of this exercise was military versus, I don't mean in an adversarial way, but military and academia, and how much of it was just two groups who will work together, at least conceptually at some point in the future, who just need to get to know each other a little better? It sounds like it's the more basic of those two analogies.
I would say it's both. The idea of just bringing two groups together, it's too hard to still hide behind the veneer of your profession. And so the whole idea of the way we designed the exercise was to take it to an operational level so that military advice became absolutely essential. But the dynamics of the situation meant that it moved quickly into the political realm and understanding larger issues such as strategic deterrence, escalation management, things like that, really called on the expertise of the civilian experts.
So my favorite part of this, Paula, you write, happened after the exercise, the formal exercise, was over. So my vision of this in my mind is everybody's kind of in a holding pattern waiting for the results to come through, whatever those may be. And you write, after the exercise, while the players' actions were being evaluated, something simple yet powerful happened. Civilian participants asked military players about their uniforms and associated accoutrements. Among other things, this facilitated questions about past deployments, future ship assignments, overseas tours, and peace and war. The military participants asked about the academics' cutting-edge interdisciplinary research. They got to know each other, is what it sounds like you're suggesting, Paula.
It was terrific, and it all started. We had one of the Marines that was playing on the military side. Literally, he just happened to have worn his ribbons that day, and one of the civilian academics said, "What does that ribbon mean?" And literally, he was patient enough and kind enough to walk through his career, which took him through his deployments in Bosnia. It took him over to Iraq. It took him to Afghanistan, and then that very naturally led into a question about, well, how did you end up going through this university? What took you there? And that's exactly what happened. They got to know each other, and they built that just very human respect.
You write, this tabletop exercise suggested the best way to bridge the civilian-military divide, especially at the senior levels of government, is not large conferences or formal papers. Instead, it can be done by building trust one person at a time over time. I love that approach, and I've seen it work in my own career, and I've seen it work in the careers and lives of many, many people. The problem is, it's really hard to scale, isn't it, Paula?
Roger that. It's very hard to scale. And one of the things that that we've been really working hard, both at RAND and at the Stanton Foundation, to try to figure out is a way that you can scale it. There's no way that you can do this with thousands, maybe even hundreds, but you could certainly do it with scores of folks. And I think it's a small impact, but it's a real impact. So we're heartened by it.
You write about three takeaways that you took from this. The third one we've actually talked about already, the importance of those formal conversations. We've also talked about the relationship building element of this. The middle one, you write, it highlighted the importance of a safe learning environment where ignorance can be disclosed, questions asked, and mistakes made. And I would argue that that's part of this relationship building that we've already discussed, where you gain a level of trust with somebody that you can feel that level of comfort by saying, I don't know the answer to this, or this is a fact that maybe I should have, but I don't, so can you please help me?
That's exactly right, and it happens on all sorts of things. It can happen on something as basic as saying, "I don't know the difference between an SSN and an SSBN." To somebody in the Navy, that's like knowing the difference between the Orioles and the Nationals. But the flip side of that is that without that conversation and without highlighting that particular point, and being able to ask those questions, what you do is you not only share ignorance, you talk past each other.
Well, and it also sounds, too, like one of the major benefits, and I guess this is a subtext of what we just discussed, is that each person recognizes that while I know this lingo inside and out, there's lingo that I've discovered now that I need to understand that I don't, and so it doesn't pay for me to talk down to this person because someday I'm going to have the same kind of question for them.
Absolutely. And not only that, what I found with both communities is they genuinely wanted to learn about each other. And frequently, it's just not knowing where to start. And so if nothing else, this was a bit of a start.
What would be an effective conduit for this to happen on a broader scale? I understand that the limitations that you discussed about scale are accurate. I agree with all of them. But you got to start somewhere. You have to, you have to shovel one shovel full of snow if you're eventually going to move the drift.
My instinct is, and like I said, I'm still playing with various models that might actually make this more scalable, is that it has to be done in Washington, D.C., because most of the players that would be involved, they're here, so it saves them the travel, number one. Number two is that you do have to, you have to create something that's relatively short in time. We did ours for 2 days. The question is could you do something in a day so that you could actually grab these two communities and accelerate the experience? And then the other part is the way that we ran the exercise, it was 50-50 participation, and we ran it, like I said, at the operational level, at the combatant commander level. You could scale that so that there were more roles that you could play and get more people involved doing that as well.